Welcome home. We are WNST, AM 1570, TASS in Baltimore. We are Baltimore Positive. We are in the middle of one of the most positive places that I know. There's a sign on the door that says, only nice people allowed, and they still let me in. We're here at Coco's Pub. It's all brought to you by friends at the Maryland Lottery. Everybody in the joint has a Ravens scratch-off ticket right now. I had three dudes at the bar. Like, we won. So I took a picture with them. They won $2. Dude. And the best part is when you have the Maryland Lottery app and the second chance, you click on it and it, like, balloons go off. And you feel like it says, congratulations, you're a winner. It doesn't say you're a loser. It just says, you know, enter second chance is what it says. But Maryland Lottery does put us on the road along with our friends from GBMC. And I'm having my colonoscopy in 3 weeks. I've been chastised by many people, middle-aged men, who have come before me and drank the special milkshake and starved themselves. So I'm not looking forward to that. I'm going to eat my freaking face off on the Crab Cake Tour between now and then. I'm at Coco's today. On Friday, we'll be back at Pizza John's in Essex. I will have a fresh batch of Raven Scratch-Offs. I'm waiting to get the scented candy cane ones because it makes my bag smell like candy cane. I prefer the gingerbread, but I will take it. All month long, we're doing a Maryland Crab Cake Tour. We're here at Coco's, and it allows me to reach to old friends, new friends. This guy is, you've been on the show before. You apologized the last time you were on because you're like, I wasn't awake enough. I was distracted too much. You got to invite me back on. I didn't feel great. And then I ran into him last week. You were already booked on the show today at the Baltimore Business Journal Business of Sports Conference last week. Greg Abel runs a local marketing PR firm. He is, and this is why I probably like him and probably why we're going to argue and debate and come to some center point, is he's a journalist at heart, right?
That's right.
You would consider yourself a journalist.
Yep, by training.
You even said to me, right as we're wiring up here, we've known each other a long time. I'm like, save it for the air. Save it for the air. First things first, you've never been to Coco's, right?
I have never been to Coco's. I'm so excited to be here.
I love bringing first-timers today. Yeah. I'm bringing a legend here in the last hour. The great Nancy Longo from Pierpoint. Chef Nancy has been my friend forever and ever. And she doesn't know Mars, and Mars doesn't know her. Mm. And they live sort of in the same neighborhood. And there was a piece written on the wall. I don't know if it was Daily Record or Baltimore Business Journal. I got to go. Maybe it's Baltimore Magazine. Comparing the Pierpoint crab cake to the Coco's crab cake, like 20 years ago. And it's on the wall in here. And but Nancy's coming over today, and I'm. It's Baltimore Positive. It's a lady over there just said, "What do you do?" I'm like, I bring people together.
Yeah,
I kind of think is what I do,
that.
Right? What is my brand? You tell me.
I think your brand is talking to people. I think it's you pivoted actually years ago, as we know, from doing all sports to doing more of the let's celebrate Baltimore, what's good about it.
I still do sports better than anyone, and I'll argue that with anybody.
I'm not saying you don't. I'm just saying you expanded to other things.
Yeah, it wasn't joyful for me. I think you realize that, right?
Yeah. Well, we do lots of things too, and I think kind of it keeps you refreshed. It keeps you sharp to talk to people about different things than just sports. Sometimes just talking about sports, I mean, makes you feel like, don't I have other interests? This isn't the only thing I care about. We care about culture and film and TV shows and other things. We just also love sports. So I think it's a good pivot you made.
It's fun when you mesh it all together. I mean, I spoke to an Italian charity group Tuesday night. Big thanks to everybody that came out, even those of you who disagreed with me and told me you were never going to vote in the direction I am. But that's fine. And that's America. We had a great conversation about a lot of things. But I was in front of a group of all men, all local business, all Italian, and many of them knew me, had been on trips, they owned businesses, some familiar faces, some former electeds. It was just a wide mix of Baltimore people, and I'm up at Pappas and Cockeysville doing this, and I'm wondering what my speech is going to be. And as I looked at it all, I'm like, how many of you own a business? Everybody here has been through COVID. Everybody in the room had been through Camden Yards being opened and remember in this city when we didn't have football and we didn't have the Ravens. And I tried to like put people back into that mind frame to say that the whole idea of sports, and really even going back to the Clippers and the Colts and whatever, was bringing people together.
Yeah, for sure.
I mean, it brought people together who wouldn't norm, black, white, east, west, male, female. I mean, it was a center point for a guy from Northwest Baltimore and a guy from Dundalk to wind up sitting next to each other on 33rd Street as kids in the 70s, right?
Well, that's right. And I think that it expands from like the family on out to the neighborhood and the region and the state. So if you think about it, sports operate as a way for even your own family to get together. So I'm sure as your son was growing up,
you go
to ball games together,
Thanksgiving is about football in this country, which is one of the reasons football has become so electric, is that it When people do come together, they watch football.
They watch football. They might even play some touch football before the games.
That was the Kennedy family did that, I think.
But where I'm going with that is, like, I learned a long time ago, my kids were young, they're college age now, that going to a ball game together, whether it was the Orioles or the Ravens or even just, Loyola or Towson to see a basketball game, was a reason to be together. It was a reason to go out together as a family and see something we had a common interest in. So it started selfishly. And then, like, you enjoy the game. And then when you're at the game, you see your friends and neighbors or maybe people you don't know. But you have an immediate thing you can talk about, what's going on the court or the field in front of you. And so I don't think there's a better way. Like, as much as politics are divisive that way, sports are communal that way. And I think we need that because a lot of the world is so divisive right now. So sports plays a very important role.
Well, that World Series gave people a reason to cheer, even if you weren't on either
side. Oh, my gosh.
It was just sports is the last great live drama. And television reflects that. Ratings reflect that. All parts of that reflect that.
How did you feel about the winners, by the way, Nestor? Were you pulling for the Blue Jays in the AL East, or did you like the Dodgers?
So I'm conflicted, right? Because I love Janet Marie. Mm-hmm. And to see her hold the trophy again. But I'm like, Janet Marie, damn it, you got three now. That's enough. You know, let somebody else win, you know. Mm-hmm. But I was rooting for Geddy Lee and for his grandson. I was rooting for the Blue Jays because they haven't won in 33 years. And I was in the upper deck when Joe Carter hit the home run in Toronto.
Oh, wow.
I was at that game.
Phenomenal.
So I went to a lot of World Series games in the 90s. So I feel the passion of all that. One thing I said to Luke was the weather was good. And I remember World Series games in Cleveland and other in New York just being really cold and raw and bitter.
Right.
Not really great baseball weather, as you'd see it. So I think we get great baseball. And, the baseball thing is the tie that binds us, I think. Right?
Yeah,
that is our glue, right? That and the journalism.
Well, if you remember years ago, when I was a reporter at the Baltimore Business Journal in the 90s, and that was when you were starting at WNSD. So we talked about the media landscape at that time when you were just getting going. And there were lots of other entities in town trying to kind of grab that mantle of the sports radio station. I think you were first, right? All sports all
the
time?
Yes.
WNST 1570 AM back
the
in the day.
Station with balls. Is that good?
So you had a lot of vision, Nestor. I have to give you a ton of credit because the world did go in that direction. Now we're inundated with so many media properties that cover sports all day and all night. Where am I going with this? Yeah, like I came from journalism telling great stories, and there aren't better platforms for storytelling than sports because it just has all of it. It has business. It has, you know, the realization of human potential or failure. You know, one of the things I think about all
and
the time.
And you can bet on it, but don't tell anybody.
That's a whole other thing. Yes. But, like, this idea that in a game, no matter if you're watching your kid's middle school soccer game or the World Series, these people care, and someone's going to lose. Someone is going to lose, unless we're talking about
Andrews, don't expect him to make it to the podium after the game. You know.
Well, that's a different topic. But I think that you go to this with this understanding that there will be a winner and a loser. You don't know if it will be you that night. Makes it exciting and sometimes heartbreaking, right? Like, I was at a conference.
Oh, my God. Those people in Toronto.
Oh, my God. Can you
imagine? Place goes silent when you lose like that. You know what I mean?
Can you imagine? You know what I was thinking about? Like, have you ever been in a Ravens game? Like, we sit upstairs in 503, my family, and, like, if after a loss, like a tough loss, and you have to walk down, like my dad likes to walk the ramps, that's a tough walk.
It always was. It was at Memorial Stadium when you lost to the Yankees back in the day,
it's
right?
A tough
it just
walk.
Was tough. So you said you had never been to Coco, so I want to go community. Greg Abel's my guest. Give the full name of your – I don't want to call you a PR guy or a marketing guy. I don't want to offend you. You know what I mean?
No, there's no offense taken. I run a communications marketing services firm called Abel Communications. We've been proudly based in Baltimore for 20 years, currently have an office in
Mount Vernon. I need to hire a good PR person.
Well,
you know,
here I need
a brand company, you know?
Yeah, we're going to have to talk budget, though. You know that.
I went to AI and asked AI about my brand. Apparently my brand – you should be recruiting me. Good at this point. But brand management in the era of AI is as really like you can find where you are. You know, I mean, you can get your temperature a little bit. But it's a guy like you that tries to affect that. Literally.
Yeah, I mean, what we
tell
do,
your story.
We work with companies, nonprofits. So, for example, a wonderful nonprofit we work for is the Baltimore School for the Arts. And we help make sure people are aware of the great programs that they offer for kids through their TWIGS program for youth that can be anywhere from Baltimore City. And you have to audition, but if you make it, you can learn how to sing and dance and perform. And then if you audition and make it to the high school, a lot of people come out of that school and have professional careers in the arts, and a lot of people have professional careers in other things.
She won? Did you win? You won.
Oh, we have.
You won?
What did I win?
I don't know what you won. Hold on. I have to scan. Greg, give me a minute. Yes. I have lottery duties here. Retired. Come over here so I can get you on camera. Retired. I mean, I'm going to read. Stand right here on the camera. Retired adjective. I do what I want, when I want. See also, not my problem anymore. God, I can't wait to get to that point in my life. So I have to get my Maryland Lottery scanner out. Hold on a second here, and I got to get my right app. Hold on here.
Two.
Did she win or did
I'm
do you
a
think
lot
you
of
won?
Twos, Nestor.
Or did, we got a lot of footballs. Yeah, hold
is it
on.
The two
hold
or
on.
The
Let me see Maryland Lottery. Hold on. It says scan right here. Hold on. Let's see. I'm going to scan it, and let's see. It says you're a winner. She won $20. Look right here. $20. Holla. Look at that. $20. Look at that.
You won lunch.
And there
you,
take it to a lottery retailer and get you $20. I can't give you $20. Okay. But that is as good as a $20 bill. I can't believe you let me touch it. Winner, winner. All right. I paid for half her crab cake today. All right, see, there you go, man. People really win. Happy people here. All right, so anyway.
I was finishing. Let me just.
Finish your spiel.
The spiel is that my company helps other companies make the people they want aware of the products, the services, the people that they offer, that they have. And it's a lot of fun. You get to know someone. You kind of understand. Everyone in business has an area of expertise, you know.
Oh, I keep going. Just keep going. I'm going to scan. I'm the professional scanner here. Go ahead. Just keep going.
Yours is radio, communication, sports, Baltimore Positive.
Scanning.
So if we work with someone else, we're going to figure out what their special thing is and accentuate it for them. Like right now, your special thing
is. Do you know what the official name of the stuff you scratch off of here is? John Martin and I call it schmutz. So is it what it is?
That's a Yiddish word, schmutz.
Winner, $5 winner. $5 winner. Look at how happy we are. $5. Everybody, I feel like Oprah. You get a crab cake. You get coconut shrimp. You get cream of crab soup, you know? So I'm doing that for everybody.
That reminds me of his $5 hats outside Oriole Park.
This School for the Arts thing, when is their big event every year?
Oh, they have a fundraiser called Expressions that happens in March.
So then you need to call me in January, and I help you promote it in February
and March.
All right,
fantastic.
That's what Baltimore Positive does.
We'll love it. We'll
see,
do
this
that.
Is exactly how I can help you, right?
You'll never feel more inspired than walking out of a BSA performance. These kids are amazing.
I was pretty inspired by her $20 win there. I went and saw Pippin up at NDP last year. Seeing community theater is a wonderful
Pippin
thing.
Pippin was here?
Oh, yeah,
My father's favorite show of all time is Pippin. Like, he'll get in the car. We're going to a game, Nestor. I'm not kidding. He'll go, put on Pippin. Like he's saying, put on Bruce Springsteen or put on, I don't know, REO Speedwagon. Put on Pippin. That's all he wants to listen to.
Gotta find my corner.
Why didn't you tell me Pippin was in town?
Sky. Right. I've been looking for my corner of the sky. Greg Abel is here.
The old Orioles theme song.
Something
we
magic.
Got magic to do.
Magic. Well, see,
just for you.
Yeah, see, the magic to do song came because of Charles Steinberg. Charles Steinberg brought that song. See, if you go to Baltimore Positive, Charles Steinberg was the longtime PR and community relations person for the Orioles. He loved theater. He brought that song out in the summer of 79 when Pippin happened, and it became a part of them walking out when the pitcher came out. Magic to do Memorial Stadium.
Yeah,
right.
I love that
Charles
song.
Steinberg. There's your history lesson.
Oh, man.
It's almost like I'm a guy who once did a walkout on Peter Angelos, and you were once a guy who chronicled it.
That's right. That's our other
Because when I think of you,
yes,
that's what I think of.
Right. Well, let's remind our listeners and viewers. Go ahead.
Well, did you ever write about me in Baltimore Business Journal, maybe? Was there a
byline? Early on. I did.
I think I probably have that clip,
a story
right?
forever ago about like how new sports radio stations are coming to Baltimore. Because at the time, what was the one in D.C.? Was it FAN for D.C.?
The team. Right.
Remember that?
Yeah.
And so when the team opened in D.C.,
Red Zebra broadcast.
I did a kind of a roll-up of here are the other sports radio stations in town, one of which was yours, and then talked about how WBAL just had some programming, but it wasn't obviously their whole thing. So that was where we first probably connected. But then years later, 2006. Do you want to tell the story?
Well, I mean, I did Free the Birds. Everybody in my audience can Google it, look it up. But if they look it up, chances are they're going to see your work. Because in 2006, I was relatively unaware of the internet. I mean, there may have been a point where you taught me to grow up that day and move to .net, right?
Well,
like I went to WNST.net in the aftermath of Free the Birds because of all of the feedback I got that were emails.
Right.
Like, I had a lot of email addresses, and I hated the internet, right? Like, the internet was a place where the Sun would have message boards where people would, you know, cut naked pictures of people out, put my wife's head on it, and throw it on. This is in 2005. It was outrageous. Mm-hmm. This, people talking. It was just awful. The Sun's message boards were this bar stool, this early bar stool. So I really was like, it's so unregulated. It's so anonymous. It's the internet. I hate the internet. Imagine that. It's 20 years ago, right?
Well, it and also that,
that's an old guy's thought.
Handled poorly by legacy media companies like The Sun and others that just started putting their content online instead of having paywalls. And it was the start
the
of
comments.
The
comments. You mean the comments were a toilet, right?
All of
literally.
That. All
before.
Of that.
Now, that's before MySpace. That's before Facebook. All of that. So in 06, I do the walkout, and literally, you know,
well,
even
I
20 years later,
happened.
Like, I walked out of the stadium. I lived two blocks away. I walked past reporters to not even do stand. I didn't want this. The story should have been about the walkout, not about me.
Right.
And when I went home that night, Dave Ginsburg and I got into it because he reported the crowd poorly, and he and I, you know, he'll get a crap kick out of that.
The former Baltimore Orioles AP reporter.
Correct. Yeah, and I love Dave, but like he was wrong about how the crowd was reported because we had video, we had pictures, we had evidence that the newspaper may or may not run at that time. Now, the newspaper was still a newspaper then. Schmuck was there. He met me at the bottom of that walkway. But what really happened was, in the day or two after Free the Birds, we were in the middle of football season. I was doing the show with Billick and Rick Neuheisel over at the at Mount Washington Tavern. People started coming up to me and emailing me and saying, you need to go to this YouTube thing. And I'm like, YouTube? Is that you, like, UT?
Right.
YouTube.
It was early.
Why? Nobody knew what YouTube was.
Well, let me...
And you were really a prescient person to have put together this really amazing professional video of the walkout that got very viral on this brand new thing called YouTube. And I had no idea it was you or who did it. I just was like, well, that's kind of cool that somebody was inspired enough to come out with a video camera,
right?
Which was still an effort then.
It was
a
different era. So here's what happened too. Like, I didn't have a smartphone that we do today. Like, these cameras we walk around with now are, like, high def, and everybody has a, you know, like, if someone would have won $100,000 today with your scratch-off, the whole place would have erupted. Everybody would have taken out the camera. This thing would have been on Facebook and Instagram immediately, right? Then I used to do some videography kind of semi-professionally. I did a few weddings. I did, like, family events.
Hobby.
I enjoyed cutting together the clips, overlaying music, having transitions. I just liked it.
I went to college for that. That's what they taught me.
Yeah, it was fun.
Yeah.
And so when my friends got wind of the Free the Birds event, you know, we were listeners to your show in the mornings especially, and you were publicizing this Let's Walk Out. And we were also frustrated with the Angelos regime and what was happening with the Orioles, and we hadn't had a winning season since 1997, right?
Right. It had been 9 years at that point.
And it wasn't just losing. It just seemed
awful.
Futile.
Yeah, it was awful.
And so everyone was frustrated. Not everybody walked out that day, but I decided to go to the event. We had our black T-shirts on, and I had a good camcorder. So I just brought my camcorder. Now, remember, I didn't bring, like, my flip phone to do this. I had to bring, like, a camcorder. I had to charge the batteries. I had to put in a mini DV tape. I had to go there with the intention of creating something because I liked to do that kind of stuff. So I went to the event. I videoed you. I videoed a bunch of the other just participants. I did some interviews. I kind of played reporter, even though I had no outlet to write for. I just figured, I want this for posterity. I want it for myself.
Greg Landry also shot raw video that day that I have all these years later. He shot on mini DV too. So, I mean, 20 years later, I have tons of raw footage of all of
it.
I don't know what value it has at this point.
Well, it's legacy stuff for you because I think...
I'm so proud of
Baltimore
doing Free the Birds.
Baltimore needed someone to say, like, this isn't okay.
This isn't okay.
That's what you were saying
that
day.
Yes, this isn't okay.
And, and those of us with you said, we don't think it's okay either. And in my...
I'm calling bogus on this right now. It's my fast times.
If there were a movie about Baltimore baseball and, like, let's say we win the World Series next year, that would be the capping thing. But, like, it could start at the Free the Birds day where, like, this team was so bad 25 years ago that we literally walked out of the stadium and then, like, we'd see you marching out. We could get the archival footage.
I don't know about all that,
It could be our version of what's the movie with... the Boston sports movie with...
I don't see sports movies, so you got the wrong guy that's going to help you with this, you know?
It doesn't matter. So let me finish the story about that day. So I shot the video. We walk out. I'm filming. You remember, we literally walked out. It was the bottom of the fourth?
Well, it was 5:08. It was a time. It was a time. So okay. I had no idea I was walking through that bowl. I've told you that, right? Like, that was not the plan. I didn't have a plan.
We were out.
The plan was
field.
Just to go raise hell and leave. Like, that was it, right? Like, that was literally the plan. And when I went to leave, everyone followed me.
Yeah.
Right? And they're like, what are you doing? What are you doing?
You were our leader.
And I'm like, I'm going to do something.
Yeah.
And as I walked down that corridor,
yeah,
and we were all yelling, free the birds, and yeah, you videoed that out in left field, right?
Yeah.
When we got to the bottom, I looked, and there was one usher stopping me from getting to the bowl. And he couldn't stop me. I was just walking through the stadium.
Right. Right.
I
You're
walked
to walk
into the bowl,
the
and Schmuck was there with a notebook, smiling at me like you are right now. And
but then everybody was following you, right?
And then everybody followed me
you
into
were the
bowl.
Pied Piper.
But I didn't have...
There was no grand plan.
It was no grand plan to walk through the bowl. So I walked into left field, and I'm like, where am I going to go now? I'm going to walk to home plate.
Yeah.
So I walked the railing to home plate, and then I walked out to right field, and I looked back, and people still were filing in.
Yeah.
So that's why when Ginsburg wrote that there were less than 1,000, there were a lot more than 1,000
people.
There
was a lot of people.
Yeah, but nonetheless.
No matter what, that you made a statement that day. We made a statement that day as a community that we weren't okay. And then on the YouTube side,
I called
side
it
and
a poop
that.
Burger is what I called it. But yeah.
And, you know, it was great, but then it was also like, why do we have to do this? Can't we just have a good team?
Yeah, I just want to go to the games,
right,
man. Like,
right.
I love it. That's where I am with Katie Griggs. That's where I am with Sashi Brown. That's where I am. Greg Abel is here. And given that background that you made this cool movie, you can still find it. It kind of got YouTube. He used Twisted Sister. We're not going to take it.
It's back
it.
Up.
It
it's
is back up.
You
oh, can,
if you Googled or YouTube searched... Free the Birds, and my ID for me was gscott3303. Free the Birds, and then that, you'll find it. Even just Free the Birds video, it'll come
up. Because they did
up.
Pull the sound down
and
on
And then
it.
They put it back, because they changed
okay,
the
Okay, I
policy.
Didn't know, but it's been 20 years, right?
It's been a long
but
time.
That video had tens of thousands of views in the first couple of days to chronicle what we had done.
Right.
And then I didn't realize it was you, and then you and I connected. And
yeah.
So all these years later, I think you've only been on the show like once or twice, and it's really fortuitous. We're here at Coco's. We're doing the Maryland Crab Cake Tour. It's all brought to you by the Maryland Lottery. I've
place.
Already got winners and losers. And
do I get a ticket? Can I try my luck?
You want number 30? Eddie Murray, you're getting 30. No, okay. Hold on. You want 33 or 34? Section 34? Or do you want Eddie Murray?
Eddie.
You want
That's
Eddie?
An easy
Eddie,
decision.
Easy Eddie, 33.
My
all right.
favorite.
I'll keep 34 for the
time.
Ghost of Bill Hagee.
Eddie Murray and Juan Dixon for me.
So all these
guy.
Years later, you have this PR firm. I know of you. We bump in each other around town. I would try to help any of your causes or charity things with Baltimore Positive. And you know my whole background of like the politics and the sports and all that crap. The Orioles and the Ravens taking my press credential as a media member and allowing my Caucasian employee free reign to go in and ask questions, but not I. Last week, I took it upon myself to buy a $100 ticket for your former employer at the Baltimore Business Journal to hear what the anointed, their oxygen's too good to spend time with a local business owner who's got 2 million people on my Facebook in the last 4 weeks, which is more tickets than they sold this year, by the way, for the Orioles. But they came down with Maroon and did a part of this whole thing with Sports Business Journal. I thought the NIL part of that with Steve Eigenbrod and Dina from over here at Morgan, it was great. But the Sashi, Katie Griggs thing and what they where they are with their brands in 2025 and you being in brand management knowing this community as well as anybody from a sports perspective, I was really underwhelmed. You know, I'm really underwhelmed by the Orioles and the Ravens marketing efforts, by the authenticity that they sort of lack. And that's where the Craig Albernaz hiring happens, where they do this 10-second video with this Boston accent. And he seems like the nicest guy, 3 kids. But then there's the Rubenstein Elias Albernaz press conference this week. Last week there was the Sashi Brown, Katie Griggs, $100 just to be in the room. And there were 100 of us there maybe 80 to 100 of us. You were there
yeah,
as well.
Yeah, it was a decent crowd. It was a business crowd. So,
right. Give me your perspective on that kind of an event, going to that event, what you expected, what you expect to hear from them. Because I can say I'm underwhelmed because I'd like to sit here with Sashi and sit here with Katie Griggs
right.
and really ask them what's up and hear what's up. I don't think they have any interest in being not even transparent, but even being front-facing regard to what they're trying to do with the $1.2 billion of our money in regard to premium this and premium that. And it doesn't ever feel warm and cozy that it's about Lauraville and people in the community coming to the ballpark.
Well, let me, if we back up a couple steps, let's remember that, especially on the Katie Griggs Orioles, it is early days, okay? This leadership team, and they're still putting their team together on the marketing, the communication side. We need to give them some time to figure out how they're going to communicate.
It's been a year and a half, though.
It has, but Katie has only had the job for one full season, and I think some of her staff as well, and there's more to come. And I did not have maybe the same expectations you did at that event to like hear the inside nitty gritty. Like, I knew they weren't going to go in depth on things that you probably didn't know if you just read the official announcements from the O's or read the media coverage.
It was very, very scripted from there.
High level.
Most of the words that they have said, sure, I've heard them speak before publicly.
Yeah.
It is their stump speech for when they go to talk about A, B, C, D, and E, and they have it all in a nice 45-second soundbite,
right,
and they tell one little cute anecdote that they've told a dozen times before. Like, it was very – and Rubenstein's thing at Beth DeFillo last year, which is a year ago, like tomorrow, that I attend, is before the night before the election – that Rubenstein spoke at Beth DeFillo, and I went out there, and it was very much the same thing. He's got a speech.
Yeah.
He's got a speech, and once you've heard it, that's that.
Look,
I'm in the
communications business, Nestor. These guys are not going to break news at things like that. These things, if they had a big news thing, they would kind of do it at their own thing, and they would kind of orchestrate it on their own terms.
I just mean speaking authentically.
I get
that's
what you're
saying.
I will say the most authentic things I heard that day that weren't just like updates on what's happening with the new scoreboard or the social area in center field were this discussion that I thought was candid about the competition Major League sports have, not just with like other teams, but other things to do. So there was an interesting conversation about like, who's our competitor? Well, our competitor is kind of like your phone. The competitor is like sitting on the couch and watching Netflix. The competitor is like the world we live in today. And I thought they had an interesting conversation about that.
So what are they going to do about it? right? I mean, that's where the next question, that's where a good interviewer says, so what are you going to, what's your plan, dude?
Right.
What's your plan? You know, like, and that's what I'm
lacking.
Well,
there is a value menu at Camden Yards. You can get a $5 beer.
look, Greg, I mean, we have to draw the line as to whether we're doing PR here or whether we're doing journalism here.
Yeah, yeah.
I had this problem with Don Mueller forever because it's like, I don't do PR. I'll allow you to do PR.
No. Let me give you my honest take. I think the Orioles have done a good job in the last year and a half, like letting us know that there is new ownership and there is a new vibe going on. So I was joking about $5 beers, but having a value menu was a good idea. It's a good PR move.
Sure.
And then there are tickets that are affordable. If you're trying to go see an Oriole game in the Philly or New York, you're going to spend a lot more. Like, you can get a decent Oriole ticket for $30, $20. If you go on the aftermarket and we're out of it, unfortunately, you can sit behind home plate for less than $100. And with regard to like this regime and what they are doing, I think I have mixed feelings because on one hand, I think they're doing what major league sports teams do. So thinking about the Orioles, who I think about more than the Ravens, just because it's who I am, they're implementing a giant new scoreboard. You're going to walk into the stadium next year, you're going to be like, holy cow, that thing is big. And it's going to be like a huge part of the experience. They're going to like have better audio systems. So they're going to play music a lot. I don't personally like the sort of jazzing up of the experience where all these multimedia, digital, and music things keep the fan engaged, quote unquote.
Like the bananas.
I'm good with watching a baseball game, but I'm also an old guy. So what they're trying to do is get people our kids' age in their 20s, 30s, teens to want to come and feel like it's an experience and not just like the sport itself. Now, we both watched the World Series and had a great time watching an amazing competition on the field, and that was enough. I didn't need the glitz and the special promotions.
You didn't even need your team in it to want to watch it.
The minor league baseballization of Major League Baseball, if you will. Like, I don't need a T-shirt cannon. And I don't need you to kind of, like, have a special event every half inning. I don't need that. But I get that they're trying to attract a young and new audience to the sport, and they're doing so with modern techniques. That's where I see it.
My argument, if you were Katie, would be ketchup races and mustard races are nice, but how does that get somebody back? And how does that get somebody into the soap opera? The way you get into the soap opera is you care about the game.
Just win,
you care about the players.
You got to win.
You care.
Well, go ahead.
That's so rude. Then we should just drop the mic and not talk about them until they win. I mean, and they haven't
won
in 30 years.
I mean, that's too basic. You're right, because I want to see what Samuel Basayo does next year, right? Like, that's an intriguing storyline.
But that has nothing to do with the ketchup races.
So where are you going with this?
Where am I going with this is, if you're bringing people out there for the ketchup races, they're never going to be into the baseball team. So to me, the baseball still is the core part of it. And I speak to this as an old guy as well. Mm-hmm. I love the Orioles because, A, my name's Aparicio. My father loved baseball. My family loved baseball. Mm-hmm. Kids in my neighborhood loved baseball, which gave me camaraderie to do all that. But my real love of the Orioles was love of Baltimore. Mm. It was like my team, my town, my city. That's us against New York. That's us against Pittsburgh. Yep. That's us against Boston. That's the provincial side was what hooked me in. Mm-hmm. That's what hooks everybody into Alabama, Team X. You're not hooked into that with the Bananas. The Bananas are...
No, it's like going
to professional wrestling or whatever. You don't, right?
It's the
Globetrotters. So to me, if you really want baseball to get over, you better figure out getting people interested in baseball. Mm-hmm. And the players and the statistics and the drama and the game itself and what the infield fly rule is. Because if you're just bringing a bunch of kids or a bunch of passers-by... to roll in, to be wowed by the mustard races, I think there's an authenticity part of what they're trying to do that's missing, that misses the mark for what the stake is still the game. The stake is still Baltimore. Mm-hmm. The stake is still my favorite player. The stake is I want to cheer for my player, my team, my town. Not I want to bet on which pitch they're going to throw
or,
tonight.
Or do I want to check out the new luxury suite or the new hospitality arena or the new social scoreboard area?
Or I care what they're putting crab meat on a hot dog.
But you know, a lot of people, like, you and I are different than a lot of people. So think of yourself maybe when you were 30 years old and you had a job. Make pretend you had a job downtown and you worked in finance. And your friends at work said, let's go to the game after work. We'll have a beer there. You might not care that much about the Orioles against the Twins on a Tuesday night in June. But you might have a good time getting a beer outside at
it's
the ballpark.
It's a cover charge. Yes.
Correct. So that's a different vibe. It's a different experience.
And that's great. But that's not really building the long-term thing that they're trying to build to get the 3 million people and to fund this, which is really at the heart of it. And if I'm with Katie, and Katie either thinks I'm not smart enough to hang or she doesn't want to engage with me, but I'd love to engage with someone intelligent like her who's been doing all this, because I would say, you know, at the end of the day, you're trying to get how much per person, how many times are you trying to get them back, what are you trying to get them to subscribe to? And I think we're paradigm shift right now on media, right? Like, in how they're going to sell their... Come on, man. You and I are two old white guys, but I found out that I'm not white lately with the ice thing. So, two old Baltimore guys, what we are, right? Going to the game, paying for season tickets, parking, home team sports that begat Masson.
Right.
All of that now is going to be bundled into am I a baseball fan? Am I going to have the games on or not? I think baseball survived and thrived here because people did trip over it. Mm-hmm. It was always on TV. If they started to get good, you could go find the game.
Yeah.
Now we're getting to the point where, like, well, we'll be good again, and when we're good again, I'm going to try to charge you $19.99 a month just to have the games, and I don't watch the games anymore, and the games aren't on, and, you know, how do I get them again? Do I stream them? Am I Verizon?
Am I
YouTube TV?
What channel?
My mother would say, what channel are they on tonight when she was in her 90s?
It's not a ridiculous question.
And so finding it, and then being engaged with it, and then the reason I'm going to give you 3 hours at home isn't exploding scoreboards. It's because I love Adley or Gunner, or I love Baltimore, or I love the game, or I love live competition, or I love baseball, right? And they better figure that out, because they're going to go away, and they're going to ask people for too much money to come back when they're already out of the soap opera. Kind of like where college sports is for me right now. Mm-hmm. There's not a lot that Maryland could do, even to get me down to the game on Monday night.
I just had this conversation with a friend.
Because I am disengaged from five players who started last year and did well, and then this year, who are these people?
Right.
And who are they going to be next year? And who are they going to be next year? And I think that that is going to be absolutely the death knell for college sports. Mm. I believe that.
Let's get back to that in a
sure.
second. I want to say one thing about the Orioles and the marketing efforts. I've sat down with Mark Fine, the new CMO of the Orioles, and I do know he's genuine when he says he wants to have – be in the community, and I think we do need to give them some time.
He could come and sit and do the show today. I've known Mark Fine 25 years.
Okay, well,
Mark Fine decided to treat me like he didn't know me so last year. So I'm offended, but that being said, he runs the baseball team. If he wants to sit here and answer my questions, I would love
to do that. I'm not a surrogate for Mark, but I'll just tell you what I've seen from the organization is that he kept sort of there was a pride night. There was an Israeli pride night.
Dogs night.
There was all these things. So they're trying to be very inclusive. And there's a lot of pressure not to have a pride night these days. There's like
the Texas Rangers, I'm sure. Yeah.
Yeah. And so I do think it's
genuine. By the way, for Greg Bader, who might be listening, I've been the number one guy for pride night, for UMBC night, for HBCU night, for Coppin night. Like, I was a part of safety night in 1979. You know what I mean?
Night.
Like, yeah. Well, the safety day. They bring all the safeties down from school safeties. Brady, you know what I mean?
The stripe
and the safety, right?
The crossing
guard.
Well,
that was a big thing in my school to go to safety day. My goodness.
Well, let's talk college sports, Nestor. So what's your take on the Maryland? So a friend of mine, we're talking, a longtime Maryland season ticket holder. He said, we're going to go get a game this year. And I was just kind of like, all right, I'll go. But, like, I'm not that excited because I don't know. New coach and 15 new players. 15. There isn't one holdover. And you're just sort of, there might be one. I don't know.
And this is not an anomaly.
But
this is
going to
be the way
happening.
It's going to be most of the time.
You know what I do as a fan? Like, I'll see a box score. I like to look at box scores. So let's say a kid scored 20 points. Like, oh, who is that guy? And then you click on him on ESPN or whatever your app is, and you'll see that this is the fourth college they've been to. And this is not some, like, kid who can't, like, get his grades straight or is a bad person. It's more like they're free agents with no guardrails every year, and it's normal to play for three or four schools now. And I think we're just in a period where it has to get fixed, you know. And
who's going to fix it?
I don't know. But I guess my question I was going to ask you is, what's your interest level in Maryland basketball this year?
Zero.
Zero, really?
Zero.
What if they started 15-0?
This comes back to why you're sitting here right now doing Baltimore Positive and Cocos, is that I'm more interested in the real world than I am in 15 kids I've never heard of and 15 more kids the next year I've never heard of and something that says Maryland on it because I liked Len Bias 40 years ago. Like, you know, that would be as ridiculous as I love the Orioles because of Boog Powell. You need to love the Orioles because of what they're doing right now, and they need to make you love it. Mark Fine and Katie Griggs need to make you love that, and they're in...
I would argue Mike Elias does, too. He has a big part of that.
Well,
yeah.
And this is where I argued this morning. Luke and I got sideways, right? So we talked about the recruitment of the community.
Uh-huh.
So when I wrote Purple Rain 1, David Modell tipped me off that he was hiring Brian Billick on a snowy day at the top of the Cygnet Tower. And I'll never forget being with David up there. He's smoking his cigars in his office up there. And I only knew him a little while. I knew him 2 years at that time. And he came over to me and he threw two dittos down in front of me.
Like dittos?
Ditto sheets. Two Xerox papers.
I haven't heard that term
ditto
in a while.
Papers,
I got
right?
it.
Threw them in front of me.
Did you smell it?
It wasn't purple. It was black. But if it was purple, I'd have smelt it. Believe me. Like, I'll smell those lottery scratch-offs next month at Candy King. So I looked at it, and it was a – and it's in my book. You can Google it. I'll pull it up.
Go ahead.
I could probably pull it up on my phone if we took a break. It was a profile of what he was looking for in head coach. It was literally an outline. It was a job description. And I'll never forget that he thought after Belichick – and I wrote a whole couple paragraphs on this in the book. These were David's words that – Belichick did everything when he got to Cleveland to be anti-media, anti-fan, anti-get-along with it. He was a prick. And they didn't want that. And they hired Brian. And you remember when they hired Brian, they put Billick on the billboards around here, right?
Yeah, like, plus he had that outgoing personality.
Communication, journalist, all of that,
talk.
Right? I love Brian, right?
Mm-hmm.
But Brian, there was no question in the mind of the Modells that they needed the community recruited.
Yeah.
That the head coaches... job was to coach and win a Super Bowl, which he did, and like all of that.
But it was also to connect.
But recruiting the community was a huge, huge part of them selling PSLs, having Ted Marchibroda, being way the second dog in Baltimore behind the Orioles at that point, right?
Uh-huh.
Like, they knew they needed to build something.
They hadn't started winning yet either.
They hadn't started winning, right? Which is why they were hiring a coach at 4-12
right.
after Ted left.
Right.
But recruiting the community. And I'm 28 years later. Did the Ravens do a good job of recruiting the community in that era?
I believe
You're
so.
You're damn right they did. Mm-hmm. Who didn't do a good job? Jacksonville. Charlotte.
Mm.
Just go down the list of all of these Cleveland when they got the team back a year later.
Mm-hmm.
These broken franchises that have never really figured out how to recruit the community
mm-hmm.
in a way where the Ravens, when they came in, David went door to door. David would have been at that Baltimore Business Journal thing last
mm-hmm.
week, you know, because, and he would have been the first guy there, the last guy to leave, shaking every hand because he needed to sell his product.
Right.
I watched Katie Griggs and Sashi Brown walk into a $100 throw event last week for a bunch of executives. There's less than 100 people there. I watched them walk in as late as they could, sit in the front, be guarded, do the podium, and then rinse their hands, use the bathroom, and leave during the NIL.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
They didn't meet anybody in the room.
No, I agree with
they
you
didn't
there.
Meet anybody in the room.
There was not a desire on their part to engage beyond
well,
being on stage. That, I totally agree.
That is that lacks
think,
the authenticity that and the recruitment
yeah.
that I speak
and
to
it's not that
for
hard.
A couple of $1 million they make over Sashi Brown's making over $2 million a year. Katie Griggs is probably making $1.3 million a year to run
yeah,
and they
no
know
idea.
Nothing about this city. They have no roots in this city. They have very few common Mark Fine and I had a lot of mutual connections that are in common because
uh-huh.
he's a Baltimore guy,
yeah.
right? Katie Griggs and I had 3 mutual connections on LinkedIn when I looked her up a year and a half ago when she got the gig.
Right.
She didn't know anybody here. I know everybody here.
Mm-hmm.
Probably not.
Probably
be good to be get on my good side even because all I want for them is to be successful.
Yeah, I know.
And that's what I wanted in 2006 when we got into it with Free the Birds. All I want for them is to be successful. And when I see things, when I drop $100 and they have no interest in shaking my hand in an event or most anybody else's, it speaks
it
to this.
It just rubs you the wrong way.
No, it should rub everybody the wrong way because this is at the heart of what I go back to. You want the baseball team to succeed. What's that really going to take? What's it going to take them
you know
to win?
It's interesting now that you bring it up, and I did notice that, and I kind of had mixed feelings. On one hand, I sort of get it. You're very busy. You're running a major league sports franchise. You took the time to walk here and present in front of a group of business people. You felt like you did your job. It would not have been that hard to hang out for a little bit. And what if you even sat there and listened to the sports, the college sports NIL panel, like you were interested in the
and
topic.
Learned something?
That would have been interesting. And then people would have gone
I learned
going,
something.
Hey, did you notice that they stuck around and watched the other one? And then they talked to Steve Eigenbrot from Towson. They talked to the head of Morgan State's athletic department. Maybe that's unrealistic, but it like from a PR perspective, a perception perspective, I would totally grant you the point that that would have been
they need to know more
that
people
would have been
here.
Well received
well and this is where
but they didn't not do anything I would argue with you to the extent that like they showed up it was Katie and Sashi at the front of the room giving pretty intimate access to the thinking of the executives of our two major sports franchises for about 45 minutes in a conversation that while it didn't break news was at least if you didn't know that you and I both
I enjoyed it
right
so I enjoyed it
wasn't nothing it wasn't nothing. Was it, like, groundbreaking and, like, thought-provoking? Like, eh.
I'm not calling it nothing, but they didn't sell any tickets that day. You know, if that was – I don't know what their goal was to extend their brand, right?
Yeah.
But for me, this really speaks to the heart of Luke and I's fight and where you wanted to fight with me 15 minutes ago, which was they need to win. They need to win.
Yeah.
They need to win. They need to win. They need pitching.
That's not my only point.
But – okay, so what do we do between now and then? Because they might not win, right? So
they
between now
win.
And then, what is the maximal effort? What is the best, most authentic way that they could bring back caravans, bring back FanFest, be out in the community, have their manager
yeah.
sitting here today doing my show for the first time ever because they would be like, hey, we're changing. Because people say to me, has anything changed? I said, well, when I get my press pass back and they start sitting and talking to me, I'll know they've changed. In the meantime, I'm watching all of it from afar. I paid $100 last week. The issue for me is the recruitment of the community is the only way the Orioles are sustainable.
Yeah, I think we're going
to
see that.
People have to come back.
I,
people have to care.
Yeah.
People have to open their credit cards up. People have to buy their television package. People
yeah.
have to be engaged in watching 130 games a year of their television package.
You know what the Orioles, like, I talked to Mark about this, is like a grassroots effort that when you walk into Coco's on a Wednesday in June, the game is on. And that's not, I don't know, I don't hang out here, but like I'm going to guess Coco's
that's
has
problematic
the game
on a Friday night when they're on Apple TV. I promise you that.
Right. See, that's a thing. Like, I think the restaurants, the bars, there's screens everywhere these days. Can they make sure at least a lobby on behalf of the team to have the game on? Having the game on is like, you know, that's branding.
Cost too much in my bar, right? Like the NFL ticket did for a lot of people.
And that isn't their fault. That's like a macro issue. That's where MLB took
well, then,
the
then you got to go up to New York and raise hell and tell them that your customers are.
Yeah.
So here's where I learned.
Now they can buy that one-off for Masson.
Well, here's where I learned the really weird part of this. I went to opening day in Toronto with Luke. We went up there for the opening back in March, right? So Luke and I flew up to Buffalo. Went across the border, went to Toronto.
That's a fun trip.
A great trip.
Did you stop at Niagara Falls?
Of course, on the way back. I had to show
Canada
Luke that.
Side?
It's prettier over there.
Canada side's
prettier. And also stopped in Buffalo for wings and beef on whack and all that. So Luke and I go to opening day, and it's packed, right? And he's got a media pass, and I bought a $12 ticket and went and drank beer with my boy Howard and David Rose and a whole bunch of my Northwest Baltimore Mafia. So we were hanging out, and then I spent the night, everybody left, and the next night, Luke was going to the Friday night game. It was Thursday afternoon, they opened, right? Friday night was the second game of the year.
Okay.
So, second game of the year, I said, I cut my foot open, and I didn't want to walk so much. So I'm like, I'm not going to the game tonight. I'm going to hang back in my hotel room. Mm-hmm. So, I'm at the Sheraton in downtown Eaton Center, Eaton Square.
Yeah,
in Toronto, and I went to the Keg. Great Canadian, you know, it's the Roost Chris of Canada. It's a steakhouse.
Toronto's awesome.
I went to the Keg and a little happy hour, a little Cabernet. And I'm making time with some Canadian people and the bartender and whatnot. It's Friday night. And I said, hey, man, the game going to be on tonight? They're like, no, man, Apple TV. I'm like, hold on. There were 50,000 people in the dome last night at the game. It's the second game of the year. And this is a city of 4 million people. And there's nowhere in this city I'm going to walk around and look up and see the Blue Jays on TV because nobody at the bar has any idea how to get a game off of Apple TV or who to subscribe to. That's the second game of the year. They almost won the World Series last week.
Yeah.
And their Friday games aren't on in the bars in their city. That is dumb.
Yeah,
I don't know what
I
else
agree.
To call that.
And
that's dumb, Grant.
That's
an
MLB, and it's a local thing. So if, for example, the Orioles had a grassroots effort to make sure the community can see the games, like, I would hire a person whose job is, at least part of their job, to be, like, in touch with all, like, the major places where people congregate and just talk to them. Like, hey, do you have Apple TV? Do you know what it's on? When the game starts, can you put it on? We'll send you pennants. We'll send you posters. We'll send you tickets to give away. That would be a really worthwhile community outreach effort.
Well, this is a great conversation for Katie Griggs, and I wouldn't want her BSing me or Mark Fine. What's the plan?
Do you expect them to roll out their marketing plan for you? Like, I don't know. Like, they're doing it. They're working on it. And then they're going to execute it. But they're not.
Is that like the two-week Trump thing? Is that like
the healthcare plan?
Yeah, it's coming in 2 weeks. We'll have that in 2 weeks.
No,
coming in about 2 weeks.
I do think these are professionals who will execute. But, like, we got to give them the opportunity to do so before we criticize.
I gave them an opportunity to give me a media pass and to speak to me like a human being.
There.
And I haven't.
You
can
go to a game
far.
With me. I got a seat for you. You want to sit with
me? I'll go anywhere with you.
What about like the second tier sports for you, Nestor? Do you like going to a Loyola game, a Towson game, a Stevenson game? Like, do you ever go to that stuff?
Absolutely. I Coppin is my partner, so I go to Coppin a couple times a year. I went to the Towson autism game last year, the last game of the year. Towson had it.
Charleston?
Yeah, I had Pat Scarry as well on that period of time when they had the tournament, they had the disappointment and all that.
Yeah, but they were playing well.
What Towson did last year was unbelievable.
Yeah,
like
that's
exactly the kind of authenticity and the run. You were probably there that day.
Yeah, I go to most of the Towson
basketball. Right, I think I saw you there that day.
I probably was there.
So I went into CQ that day, and the place was bumping.
Yeah,
it was just.
You did a good job.
And I thought that's the authenticity. That wasn't
but remember,
sold
the place
by
5,000. They usually get 2,500, 3,000.
But getting the word out, getting people to get in their car and go over there on a cold – it was cold that day.
Yeah, you got
to
market the heck out of it.
Like, and having it be as good as it's ever been. You would agree. Being at those Towson games last March was the most fun
Did
it's been at Towson since they built the building.
I have a fun fact.
Sure.
the AD at Towson, Steve Eigenbrot, told me they're the only mid-major program that's bringing back the returning conference player of the year.
I saw that in the podium last week, and I thought that – I've said that on the air a couple times.
Oh, okay. That's so you knew.
Well, that's an amazing statement.
It speaks to the environment, right?
It does. And when I had
Coppin
– I've had Larry Stewart on a couple weeks ago from Coppin, right? And his counterpart of the female coach, he had a really good player out of Texas last year. Mm. And you know, she was scoring 22 points a game early in the year. You know she's going to be, right? You know what I mean? Like, that's the sad part of this.
She's scoring 22 right away?
No, last year. Last year. I'm talking about last year.
For the program?
I haven't checked. I think she was a junior.
Okay.
But either way, my point is, if you have that player, male or female, basketball or bowling, it doesn't even matter what sport it is at this point. If you have a star.
Well, you need.
That star is going to go to the next level, whatever
that.
Unless
you pay him. Yeah.
And I don't know what your ability is to do that. Even watching the NIL thing that we watched last week at Sports Business Journal, I learned a lot during that panel.
Yeah, that was interesting.
I learned a lot during that panel. Uh-huh. But the question is as to whether Coco's would want to sponsor me or would want to sponsor a young lady that is on the Morgan State something-something team.
Right.
Which is three blocks away from here, right?
Yeah.
Like, what rings the bell? And then there's just these billion-dollar donors that are just raining down money at all the big schools.
It makes it funny money. Like, that's just a joke.
And that's where we are, though. If Steve Bisciotti's going to fund Maryland, they're going to win.
Yeah. I mean.
Really.
And that's a realistic path for the big power schools. It's not a realistic path for the Towsons
for
and
Morgan.
The Coppins and the Morgans and Loyola, because they're just not going to do that. So you just have to accept that it's a different product.
But to your point, like accepting theater from a high school.
Sure, it's
you're
not
going,
an unentertaining
and I'm paying
product.
$10, $20, and I'm having a hell of a Friday night.
I'd go anywhere to see Pippen with Wally, my dad.
Well, let's get Wally together for Pippen. Greg Abel's here. He runs PR and communications, and I knew we were going to get down into the dirt.
This has been fun.
Well, I mean, not for Mark Fine and Katie Graves, but at least for me, you know. I mean, I love the Orioles, and I wanted nothing more with the new ownership than to have it be normal.
Yeah.
It hasn't been normal. They lost 500,000 people last year. They're in last place. That they should be reaching to people like me and saying, we need to fix things with everybody in this, especially people who love the team.
Mm-hmm.
And I would like to see them be more authentic, more front-facing, and just better than what they've been. And that's just me being the jerk on the radio. Everybody else is going to say, sign a pitcher, sign an outfielder. If they win, we'll come. And I'm like, if they win, we'll come at what price?
Well, one thing I do know, Nestor, is I know that they have a focus on the game experience, the fan experience, and it hasn't rolled out yet. It hasn't. We're going to see all these new amenities next year. That will be a draw, not as big a draw as like when Oriole Park opened and it was sold out every game, but it will be interesting to see how that plays out just from like a fan interest perspective. And then let's give them 2026 before we say they're not reaching out. I want to see what happens.
I think these next 6 months are crucial for
them. I do, too.
And I've said that with Luke, and I said that watching Rubenstein and their money. And, you know, my word is that Arrighetti is really the guy who's controlling things more so than Rubenstein in regard to the baseball
side. Okay. I don't know enough.
Well, he's younger. He's going to be the owner. I mean, I think it's pretty clear Michael Arrighetti is going to be. So I'm way more interested in him, but I'd like to hear philosophically, not Katie Griggs's talking points. I'm talking about genuine authentic communication, which is what you and I are doing right now, which we've been doing for an hour.
That's right.
And until they can get to that point, they're just this corporate thing and people from out of town. They really are.
Right. And I would tell you, when I put on the sort of my communications consultant hat, the problem with them kind of like getting real in front of the group at the BBJ event,
sticking
around, is like they have more to lose than they have to gain. I think that's probably how they view it. Only because
the stadium's empty, dude.
Well, it is now, I mean, but it won't be then in the future. And I think that it is a little bit, they're playing it a little bit safe, and I get it. I'm not saying, like, I think it's necessarily the right thing to do, but you aren't going to lose if you do it that way.
I want to see and feel them the next 4 months in a way that I never felt the Angelos family.
Well,
I never felt T.J. Brightman. I never felt any of the Greg Bate, any of the people that were running it for all of those years. They're all getting their paycheck, and it's wintertime, and we're hibernating like bears. And we were in last place, and we're going to stick our head under the table because we're embarrassed by finishing in last place. And that went on forever and ever and ever and ever.
Right.
And they wagged their finger and say, we're going to throw money at David Segui or money at Jeff Conine, and that's going to make things better.
David Segui. Yeah, I mean, when he was our best player. How about the Hunter Alberto seasons? It's like,
how about the Mark Reynolds experiment?
Look, we have.
He's going to hit 40 home runs, but he's going to hit a buck 85.
We have better players now. I think the product will be good, and I think time is going to tell on that stuff. Let's see.
All right. He's a good man, even though he doesn't agree with me.
Well, what fun would
tell
it be?
Tell everybody
if we
what
agree.
You do and tell them how they can get
so
in touch.
So I
with
run
you.
Able Communications, PR firm. So if you have a business that needs more awareness, publicity, engagement with the press, people like Nestor, give me a call or send me an email to greg@ablecommunications.com.
Who are your clients? Plug all your clients.
Point Breeze Credit Union.
I'll there you go.
Plug in.
All right.
So if you live here in the Baltimore region, you probably can be a member. Go to your local Point Breeze branch, open yourself a checking account.
They're an Essex company, correct? Middle River Company?
Yeah.
Kind of, sort of.
Well, headquarters is Hunt Valley.
Hunt Valley, okay. Yeah, I didn't know that. Okay.
But a great group
of people.
I think
of them as an East Baltimore
institution. Very community-minded.
Yes.
Great people. So I'll plug Point Breeze.
There you go. How about that? Greg Abel is here. It's all brought to you by the Maryland Lottery. He has ticket number 33 because he insisted on Eddie Murray, not Larry Bird, just to check that out. Absolutely. Eddie. See, we need to get that going back at the Camden Yard. Yeah, I'm trying to get it back.
Yeah.
One day you and I will be in the winner's circle at Game 7, and we'll be sobbing, you know, of our Oriole victory of World Series.
That'll be great. Let's do it. Let's do it. Do you think Gunnar should change his walk-up song, by the way? It's like the pink. Like, is it time?
I think Gunnar shouldn't have a walk-up song. I don't think. I don't. I'm not here to judge
walk-up
songs.
We're having this argument. You don't like walk-up songs, period, or his?
I just want him to win and play baseball.
Oh, okay.
And yeah, that's
same.
All.
Same.
Yeah.
Same. Okay. Fair answer.
Always better.
You were wrapping up. I brought it back.
Ketchup, not relish. The Maryland Lottery sends us out onto this circus. Love Riot. And, you know, so I said to Greg, I'm like, Love Riot. He's like, okay. And I'm like, no, beyond words. He's like, yeah. But I said milkshake. And he's like, oh, I got kids. So, yeah. So, you know, I mean, hipsters, rockers, alt rockers, and musicians for beautiful children, including Greg Abel's children. Lisa Matthews is here. I'm looking forward to catching up with her. It's been a couple of years. I didn't bring Gina Schock today. I told her we're going to Dundalk, hon. So Gina's too busy this weekend banging the drums in Cyndi Lauper's band at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
Oh, wow.
So she and I have been communicating because of our mutual love for Ed Lauer. I don't know if you know Ed Lauer or not. Mm. Ed had a heart transplant last night.
Wow.
Whew. I don't even know how I'm going to get through that without talking about it, but he survived the night. He's doing well, and I want to give some love to Ed and get him a crab cake because Ed grew up about 8 blocks away from here. I think Ed grew up in, was it Mayfair? What's your neighborhood called, Liz? May? What's your neighborhood? Mayfield? Mayberry? Yeah. That's where Ed's from, too. So right down the street.
Oh, all right. Well,
yeah.
Best to Ed for great recovery.
Yeah, man. Let's get Ed better. No bigger baseball fan than Ed.
All right.
I hope the Orioles do me a favor. Mm. When you leave, text Mark Fine and tell him to do something nice for Ed Lauer. Because Ed Lauer is the biggest Oriole fan in the world. I don't know a bigger Oriole fan than Ed Lauer.
Fantastic.
So we've got a new heart in Ed, and I told the story about Rod Carew and Conrad Ruland. So Ed's got a new heart. And we'll get to the heart of the matter when we return. Lisa's here. She's not going to sing. You have to get down to Patterson to hear her sing. But you'll be singing about. Have you ever had the coconut shrimp here?
No.
You like shrimp?
Yeah.
The coconut shrimp here. That's what you want.
All right.
Just get
I'm
that
in
off
your
the
hands.
Everybody knows about the crab cake at Coco's. Coconut shrimp.
That's where I'm going.
And get a cream of crab soup to go. Her cream of crab soup. Don't tell anybody I said this around town. It's the best.
Is there a tab
it's the best.
That goes on Nestor's tab?
Put it on, put it on me. Put it on me. You're my guest. For being our guest here, our sponsors receive a free crab cake. And
Yes.
Right, we're at Coco's. We're back for more. It's a Maryland Crab Cake Tour. We're having fun. Stay with us.